Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show, episode number 100, milestone number tonight. And so far, we've got co-hosts Daniel Dark and Holly Phillippe online. How are you doing tonight?
Doing great tonight, Stephen.
Doing good.
There's Daniel.
Doing good.
Yeah, Holly and I had to rush because we had more technical difficulties getting access to our studio board. So, we almost had a little adventure here on episode 100. So
we were asking for help.
So just like being a creative, the more you do it doesn't necessarily mean it gets any easier.
No. No, that's very true.
Well, we've got the chat room is open, and so access the chat room right now, and we will take live calls tonight. And we should be joined by Michael West hopefully shortly here. And but for now, we will get started with Mr. Dark and Miss Phillippe.
Okay, so, Dan, what was you going to say?
There is a big thing that people have trouble doing, and that's getting started. And that's the whole thing about, like, what happened tonight. You got to get started.
That's true.
That's true. That is true. And it's a big issue, yeah, I guess, with creatives and of all kinds. And the getting off the fence and getting in the game, so to speak. And I know that's a topic that you've been wanting to discuss on the show, Daniel. So I guess now that you are underway, I guess you could give a little perspective from where you're standing.
I just started a podcast this week. My first one I just launched Tuesday. Doing reading and book reviews and things online. I've never used any of this equipment before in my life. Have no clue what I'm doing with. Had a buddy of mine come out today and actually show me how to get the headphones on my equipment for me, where I could actually hear through the headphones as I was speaking.
Was it
and
just a setting?
Do what?
I said, was it just a setting? You was thinking it was a setting.
It was some settings and everything that were wrong, and also I'm getting a static through the headphones that we haven't figured out yet. So, but that is just part of, you know, doing something that you've never done and getting started with it. Like the first novel that I wrote, you know, I looked at it as, you know, who would ever want to read my dribble, but I'm going to write a novel anyway. You know.
And I enjoy reading your dribble. Yes.
But if I had never started it, you know, I wouldn't be here today. So.
Right.
And that is part of what, you know, what this show is going to be about tonight is getting started. You know, what, mm-hmm. you know, if you wait until you know everything about what you're going to do, you probably will never get started on anything, you know. So.
No, because none of us know everything about what we're doing.
Nope. Even the professionals that, you know, think they know a lot, good professional knows that he's still got stuff to learn.
Right. Things are always changing.
Yep. Especially when it comes to the internet and all the things that they throw at you on a daily basis.
Indeed.
Well, I mean, honestly, if we had never hosted a podcast before when the Star Chamber show started, and here we are 100 episodes later, and not all shows go smoothly, but I mean, it's definitely cool to hit that 100th show milestone where, you can look back and just see a lot of progress that's been made and a lot of things you've learned and a lot of things that, worked and didn't work and how it all kind of sinks together over the road. And it's not always visible as you're undergoing it. But then when you look back, you're like, oh, wow, it's pretty cool in the, to look back and just see the differences, changes and all that. It's all about getting underway, and because you're never going to get to episode 100 if you don't get episode one done.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And you got to realize you're never going to be perfect. I talked with Daniel about this earlier. We was talking about it, and a lot of creatives want to work on something until they feel it's perfect to go out there. Well, as a creative, it's never going to meet your standards because you are your worst critic, and it's never going to be perfect. But I guarantee you somebody out there will love it, whether it be art or poetry or writing or music, or somebody will enjoy it.
Yep. And, like the podcast that I just did, it was my very first one. Had no clue about, what I was doing or anything. Got to where I could understand a little bit on how to edit and different things like that on a podcast. And mm-hmm. got it done. It was nowhere near perfect, but I got it done. And it's out on, the air now. So.
Right.
That's something that, I would have never thought about doing a year ago, but. Here it is, and I'm starting a new venture, and helping out other creatives by talking about their books, not my books, on it. So, sometimes that's what you need to do.
I mean, I came up in the 90s learning, both desktop video editing when it was in its infancy, and of course using the standard. Beta SP to Beta SP kind of edits that you did in newsrooms in those days. And I was very proficient editing-wise, but then for a few years, I didn't have to have a need to edit, even though I was still a filmmaker. I mean, other people were doing editing for me in projects. So when it came time to do the Creative Cauldron again, when we debuted it, I had to basically relearn Adobe Premiere and get up to speed on it in a hurry. So even if you get into something for a while, sometimes you will have a learning curve, whether it's with gear or software or whatever. Just like you were getting into your podcast for the first time, and here I was. I knew editing concepts, but I had to totally relearn a software piece again in order to do what I was doing. So you're always having to do those kind of things as you're marching forward and doing podcasts or editing video or anything that you're doing has those kind of curves to it.
With my writing and stuff, I was never a good, English student when it came to school. I could tell a story, but, the mechanics of it, I was never good at it. And I'm still not, but I'm learning about it. That's what good editors are for. And that's what other people helped me out, like the buddy of mine that came by today, to help me out with my system. That's a DJ that understands what this stuff does. And he went through it, and he's like, I do not know why you're getting the static in it now. He goes, I think that you actually need to get a different cord and go straight into the computer with it. So I'm going to try that and see what that does, and also call up the company and see what they have on it. But it's, you have to sit there and go through challenges and do the things that you need to do to make it where you want it to be, no matter what business mm-hmm. you're in. and that's what we all are in. Is we're in business. We do this because we love it, but we also do it, to make money and things like that too. Because, if you never want it to be published, if you're just writing for yourself and you never want it to be published, then you just do it because you love it. And you just,
right.
But if you've got something that you love and you're wanting to do it, my suggestion is go out there and do it, and, do it to the best of your ability at the time, and your ability is going to change over the time.
No, sure.
If you keep learning on what you're doing, and, it's just like, Holly's talked to me before, I'm coming into my writing ability, I guess.
Yes.
I've forgotten exactly how she's told me, but, I'm coming into my voice a little bit more.
You are. You're coming into your voice, and I've seen a big difference in your writing, in the quality, and what you're trying to convey. You're getting your message across clearer. I mean, I see a big difference already.
Yeah, and I'm into the second, writing the second book, and, by the time I write, 5 or 10, what will my quality then over what it is today?
Right.
Even though people like what I've written today, what are they going to think about what I've written, when I get in my, 10th book or, 20th book or whatever I, wind up writing.
Right. Yeah, that's with any skill. I mean, you think about it, the more you do something, the better you're going to get. You're going to hone your craft, You have to do it and practice. That's just like, playing guitar. You can't expect just to pick it up and, you're going to, pump out some good jams. You've got to practice, You've got to stay. Same way with writing. Practice. The more you do it, the better you get.
Yeah.
Does that work with bourbon drinking? The more bourbon I drink, the better bourbon drinker I will be.
You are an avid, skilled bourbon drinker.
You could work it that way, Stephen, but most of the time it has a different effect on you. You will
and on
be
that
a
note,
bourbon
I'm...
drinker, but you'll be a little bit different bourbon drinker.
Well, I'm about to do a alcohol themed segue here, because a person who has just had his entire line of books available for sale in a brewery is now online with us, and he is one of the co-hosts that goes back with us to the beginning of the Star Chamber show, and I'll let him talk about this brewery that is carrying his signed novels. Michael West, I see you are online now.
Hello, Michael.
Down but not out.
Good evening, Scott.
So
tell us about this brewery.
Yes.
Yes.
The Scarlet Lane Brewery here in Indianapolis. Well, actually, they're just outside of Indianapolis in a small town just. Actually, they're basically around the corner from me, but they have been a sponsor of various conventions I've been to. They go to different festivals, but they're a different sort of brewery in that they embrace the horror theme. Most of their their beers are have a horror element to their name, and they brew the official beer of Horror Hound Weekend, which I've
nice.
Been a part of, so they approached me at one of the Horror Hound Weekends about, hey, we're so close to each other that we should enter a venture together and offer your books at our tap house. And I said, yes, you should. So now now all of my titles are for sale, signed copies, at the Tap House here in Indiana.
Very good.
That was so
very
cool.
Good.
And you know, that's another thing. When you did, I was like, very good. That's very, you know, thinking outside the box, because that's what I always tell people. You know, in this market, you got to think outside the box. You know, you can't
right.
just worry
right.
about bookstores, you know, and things like that. You got to think outside the box. And that is definitely outside the box. And it's right up your alley. There you go. It's handy. It's close.
Yeah.
Liquor and books.
Yeah, they're
booze and books.
Books
booze
and booze,
and books.
You know, you can't.
Books and booze.
But,
or in this case,
booze
and books.
Yes. But their address is 7724 Depot Street in McCordsville, Indiana. So,
nice.
And they're open 7 days a week. So be sure to
cool.
stop on by and try some of their delicious concoctions, and while you're chugging them down, read some of my books.
Nice.
And I'll tell you what.
What are some of the names of their
we
beers?
We have the chat room is rocking tonight, folks. We have Will
it
Hutcherson,
is.
Tommy B. Smith, Kenzie Michaels, David Sheridan, Dave Mattingly, unnamed guest in there.
Will
as well.
Hutcherson.
Guest 1139. Hello there. And, yeah, we got a nice group building up in the chat room tonight, just to chime in there. And as Dave Mattingly said, a bookstore is the worst place to sell a book. That's actually true.
Very true.
Well,
I sold a ton of books at a Books and Bourbon event and then a street fair. Yeah, back-to-back events I'd done back in the end of the summer, and they were both tremendously successful. Neither one was a bookstore environment. So, yeah, he's definitely right.
Right.
Tommy B.
Yeah,
Smith for episode 100. This is awesome.
And to answer Daniel's last question, they have a Dorian. Dorian Gray is one of their beers.
Oh, fantastic.
Mystic Sanctum. they have the Horrorhound Ale, of course, which is good. But yeah, I mean, they just have a lot of different. They just had a I can't even pronounce it, but they just had a Russian Imperial Stout that they've unveiled.
Nice.
But yeah, it's a great place. They're great people. I mean, they go to events in a hearse, so you know it's.
Oh my God! This is perfect. This is perfect. I gotta meet these people.
But
do they serve food and stuff there too?
They do. They do. They have the normal, you know, bars type snacks. So
neat.
But it's a great environment. They've just redone the tap house with cool, you know, high back chairs and couches and whatnot, so it's a good place to just go and hang out and
books and booze.
Give us the name of some of the books that you can find there, Michael.
Well, you can get all of my books there, but it's my Harmony, Indiana books, The Wide Game, Cinema Shadows, Spook House, my Legacy of the Gods series, which is Poseidon's Children. Hades' Disciples and Zeus' Warriors, and then they also have my short story collections, Skullful of Kisses, Straitjacket Memories, and then the anthology that I edited, Vampires Don't Sparkle, the sales of which benefit cancer research.
Yep.
That's cool.
What they need
that
to add,
cool.
Very cool.
I've got the idea now. Holly, we've got to go talk to this place. What we need is, like the Troll Pub, a statue of Michael West out front that people can take their pictures with. That's what would crown
that,
because he lives there. See? He lives
not,
there. He's local.
Uh-huh.
So, yes.
That's not
perfect.
A statue. That's actually me.
Yeah, we're not, just to be clear, we're not calling you a troll, Michael. We're just saying a statue of you out front.
Well, you're,
they need
not
to commemorate.
Everybody's calling them a troll.
Commemorate the West.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Well, and one of the stories that you can't buy there is my newest one, which just came out, The City Will Eat You Alive, but it is available online, and it was named one of the 10 best horror short stories of last year.
Yes.
You've been a busy man. Yep. That is a great accolade. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. I was very happy.
Awesome.
And what makes it even better is the fact that it was voted on by the readers. So it's not just,
right.
You know, I mean, it's great to be called out by your peers, of course. But, you know, when you sit and you spend your time in the solitary environment that we often work in when we're crafting these stories, you know, to send them out there into the world and have them, you know, well received and know that people are digging what you're doing, you know, it's just a really rewarding.
Yeah.
Well, solitary environment, unless you have one like Michael West, which I've seen pictures, and I'm assuming they'll be released soon, but his workspace and office, oh my God, is it cool. people will pay
yeah.
admission to see this. I'm not kidding. They would pay admission to see this.
It's true.
It's a museum.
They really would. Yes,
yeah,
they really would.
It's just about
I have not
there.
Leaked
just
the photos, Michael. I've been good. I've been better than the FBI and NSA and all of them.
Oh, I know. What's he so bad?
Secure.
I'm like, oh, I want to Instagram. I want to Instagram. I want to Pinterest. Oh, God, I wanted to so bad, but I didn't.
Oh, yeah.
I appreciate it.
They were. It's so freaking cool.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Just got a few odds and ends, and then it'll be ready for public viewing. But,
yay!
That's awesome.
I thought about putting some stuff out there, but I'm like going, well, you know, I'll put the stuff out there and I say, well, this is it, except it's missing this. You know, I said, no, I'll just wait until that's done and then just get it out there.
That's awesome.
Well,
and we have,
you know,
we have a caller, Daniel Dark, and I think you're going to be excited. We're going to bring this caller online right now. And his name is Jim Nesbitt, which you might recognize that name, Daniel. And
yeah,
you are online, Jim.
Yes, because I'm calling because Daniel owes me money.
That's
a
great
Daniel and I met at the Killer Nashville conferences back in August, and he was kind enough to invite me to call in. And I'm an author as well, and a far different genre than you guys write in. I write hard-boiled crime thriller set in Texas and northern Mexico, and
very cool.
Having a lot of fun. Got two books out, and I've got having a lot of fun slowly writing book three.
Nice.
Well, welcome to the show, and thank you for calling. And we are an all genre show.
Good to
so
meet you.
Fun.
Yeah.
Well, you just named one of my favorite poisons, bourbon. Although I tend to drink Tennessee whiskey, George Dickel. 90 proof, of course. Love cigars, and I think I probably owe Daniel at least one adult beverage and maybe one cigar. So,
well, you come to Imaginarium, and we'll get you some bourbon. You come see us in Louisville,
yeah,
and we'll get you some bourbon. Don't worry about that.
Daniel has supplied me with
worry.
Beverages and cigars.
I'm not above bribing somebody with both.
Well, you can bribe Steven.
When I come up there, I bring that ugly old Tennessee whiskey with me and everything, like the White Rapid, you know, Saloon Jack Daniels, or, you know, Gentleman Jack and different things like that.
Oh, now you're killing me. You're talking about tourist whiskey now. You know, you're going to stay with Tennessee's other better whiskey, George Dickel. That's the good stuff.
I like the White Rabbit, actually. It was pretty good.
Even
and I'm a wino.
Admitted that he liked White Rabbit.
Yeah.
And he is low.
Yeah, I'm a wino, but I liked it.
Yeah, even Eric Jude admitted he liked that one.
That was good.
It's tough to get a whiskey compliment out of Eric. Yeah.
That's true.
One of the things,
yeah, the colonel likes
the
bourbon.
One of the things you guys mentioned, and I wholeheartedly agree with, is the bookstores are the last place you expect to sell books. I've had a lot more luck at libraries and, you know, festivals and outdoor events and that kind of thing than I've had, you know, going into a bookstore. Although I think you got to do, you know, hit any venue that'll let you hang your hat for a while, but. I wholeheartedly agree that, you know, there are other venues and you need to, you know, think outside the box. I've got a friend of mine who, he'll sell his at gun shows, of all things.
Yeah,
so,
there you go.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
A great environment.
It's a good idea.
We get 5,000 people per show here in Lexington when they do a gun show downtown. So, I mean, and it's a great crowd. A lot of military-oriented folks, law enforcement folks. And, yeah, for what you do, if you do, like, you know, some hard-boiled thrillers, I imagine, yeah, you'd probably do well. One of
those. Oh, man.
I'm gonna grab the guy's coattails and go to a gun show with him pretty soon. So
definitely.
Yeah.
You know, try the hand there. So let me tell you a little bit about the books, and then I'll let you guys proceed with your show. Both books, as I mentioned, are hardball crime thrillers. They feature a rather battered but dogged private eye in Dallas named Ed Earl Birch. He's a cashier Dallas homicide detective, and as one reviewer says about him, he's nobody's hero, but then again, he's nobody's fool. So first book I had out got nominated for a Silver Falchion Award this past year at the Killer Nashville.
Very nice. Yeah.
Didn't win, but... it was a judge contest, and I was running against some of the big dogs like J.A. Jantz and others. So,
Still
a privilege, Joe. Still a privilege.
Yeah.
Pleasure to be within fast company, and that first book is The Last Second Chance. The second book is called The Right Wrong Number. And the third book I'm working on right now is The Best Lousy Choice.
Love it.
Very nice.
That's awesome.
How do we find
you
online,
have to come.
Real quick. Well, tell us where we can find you online real quick before you check out here.
Sure. I'll give you my recently revamped website, thank God. I finally got rid of the piece of crap I had previously, and... you can look me up at jimnesbittbooks.com with HTTPS / preface. And you can find both books on Amazon and Kindle and paperback.
Very good.
How you spell that last name again, Jim?
NESBIT as in tango, T as in tango. And just put books.com on the back end, and you should get to the website.
That was good.
Very cool. Folks, check him out. And, he was brave enough to call in our 100th episode, so give him some major credit for that.
No kidding.
He
deserves the whiskey now.
That's what I'm going to walk over across the house and get next. I appreciate y'all letting me crash your party, and congratulations on hitting 100 shows. That's quite an accomplishment.
Well, hope you come back and join us soon, and come back and see us in person in Louisville in October too. Love to meet you.
All right, is Brother Dark going to be up there?
Of course.
All right. Well, I'll get the particulars from Daniel. Thanks again for having me on board, folks, and enjoy the rest of the show. Hope you have a lot of crazed callers.
Thank you.
Take care, and thanks for kicking it
off.
Have
a good night.
All right, thank
good
you.
Night.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's awesome. We had our first caller, and it's somebody that at least three of the four of us have never met before. That's pretty cool. Yeah, very cool to hear from Jim. And, and it's also cool to hear from a person that is doing non-speculative fiction because, we do want to emphasize this is for all genres. So, yeah, that's we want to see more folks call in. And Jim, if you do come to Imaginarium this year, you will get to see and meet Tommy B. Smith. And so there, now I've sealed the deal. He'll be here now. Nobody turns down a chance.
I've got to bring somebody from Tennessee up there with me. So we can get more Tennessee whiskey in that you know, Kentucky zone.
In the bourbon enclave here. Yeah.
We got a few folks in Tennessee up here.
I hope Mr. Blaylock and the gang come back yet, with Erica Raymer and everybody from the Memphis area. I hope we get a return of some of those folks this year. I know Aaron Drown is coming. He's from Memphis. So, yeah, there'll be some Tennessee folks coming up.
Kenzie Michaels just shared Jim's site in the chat room if anybody wanted to check it out.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kenzie.
Yep.
Yeah.
Dave Mattingly once sold books at a sheriff's conference.
Yeah.
He said, Dave did.
Well, I'm glad that Dave is finally taking a break from beating up on Holly in that word game on Kindle that she plays all the time.
Oh, man. We don't want to discuss that. I am like a whiz bang at Scrabble, right? Well, I play Dave, and yeah, I'm not so good anymore when I play Dave. I'll never win a game playing Dave, but it's fun to play him because I know I'm going to be challenged. You know, I have to step up my game a little bit. I play words with friends with him.
Playing the best, you can. It's only going to improve your own game and make you better. So there
That's
you
right.
go. It's not a not
That's
a
right.
bad thing.
And I enjoy it. He does some good play.
Well,
he said he just took his turn.
One thing
I
was going to say earlier in
scores, David's always got these astronomical scores. It's crazy.
Do what, Daniel?
One of the things I was going to say before Jim called is Michael West is going to be the second featured author with Cinema of Shadows on From the Dark with Daniel Dark. So.
Fantastic.
Neat.
He will be the second featured artist on there. So,
well, Brewpub Awards and that. Featured on new podcast. Michael West is just his 2018 is starting off fast and furious. This is awesome.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, if only the words on the new stuff was coming fast and furious, that would be great.
I'm gonna have to get a lock of hair from the Silver Fox there. Oh man, I'm gonna have to get a lock of hair so I can get some of this good luck, man. He's rocking it. Oh man.
Yeah,
I'll take that back. Not luck. It's deserved and it's well earned. But
well,
I still
thanks.
Think
I've actually got some
me.
Old guy by the name of Steven Zimmer that I'm going to be doing his book number 3. So I don't know
well,
about
thank
him.
You. I don't know about him either. He's a strange character, very very reclusive. He's hard to get out.
Yeah,
get out and talk.
I'm glad you didn't do. I'm glad you didn't do Steven first, because he'd be a tough act to follow.
Well, I'm actually going to do the first Raiden Valkyrie novel as a reading, as part of my reading and review and stuff on there. So that's what Steven's
awesome.
Going to be having a question and answer period with me on. So
that'll be great.
Absolutely.
Very cool.
And it's coming just in time because we're working on the final edits.
Well, final polish. The rough
yep.
cut's basically done. And it's just a matter of polishing now. But not much longer.
Very
not
cool.
much longer. We want to make sure we don't kill Kylie Jude of Frozen Creek Studios because it's a small project, and, boy, she's shouldered a lot the past few months here. she's been working hard. So hopefully she's out there listening tonight for episode 100 because we love Kylie Jude. And, of course, we love Eric Jude, too. And but yeah, we want to give both the Judes a quick shout out. They've been on. Eric's actually co-hosted a few of our special shows, actually with Tommy B. Smith as well. And so he's been a part of our first 100.
Yeah, did you say a small project for her?
Yeah, well, sarcasm is yeah.
Dave Madley said Stephen Zimmers are timid creatures and rarely leave their natural habitat.
No, I'm not timid. It's just the wiser I get, the less I want to go out.
That's why we make The Office.
Yeah, that's right.
So we don't have to.
You can lure him out with bourbon, though. If you can lure him out real easy with bourbon.
Oh God, Will just got it.
Yeah,
Nutter,
but
more reclusive than the cousin of the Wild Zimmer. It is the Eric Jude.
The Wild
so
Zimmer.
Yes, Eric is even more reclusive than I am. So that is true. I even tried
Dave
to bribe Eric to come to Lexington.
Dave said they're difficult to breed in captivity.
Oh, I don't even know where to begin responding to that. So I'm just going to stay out of that one. Oh God,
that is hilarious.
Good God.
The only problem that I have on bringing him out with the bourbon is he keeps asking for Pappy something. I don't know.
Good God, the chat,
yeah,
the chat room
and
is
a wink
off the hook tonight, folks. Snow snakes. Sheridan pipes in with snow snakes. Oh no. Oh, it's yeah. Be glad you're not in the chat room, Michael and Daniel. It's they are off the hook tonight.
Yeah, they are. I think they've had a little bit of bourbon.
I think they've been, most of them at least have. I know probably not Tommy, but the rest of them have. But Tommy's already crazy. I wouldn't even want to think what he would be like on bourbon.
So. That'd be like me, you know, when I drink tequila.
Our topic tonight.
We had a topic?
Yeah, we were supposed to, so, you know. Why don't we try talking about it for a second?
All right, let's give it an effort. Let's show we've learned something after 100 episodes. Let's try.
Yes, let's try.
What
do you want to say?
When it's actually a question for you and Stephen. When you started Seventh Star, had you ever worked with a publishing company before?
Well, Stephen,
when,
you started it, so.
Well, at the outset, I had not worked with a publishing company, but I had for a time been involved with an independent record label, also been involved in the film world, and then all with, you know, all the ancillary things like film distribution and so forth. I'd also had experience in media with both television stations and back in college, I wrote regularly for our college newspaper. So in all of those spheres, I'd been around things that were very relatable. I mean, obviously there's things that are specific to the book publishing world, but, you know, I had been around distribution models. I had been around, you know, creative product and things like that. So it wasn't that crazy of a segue to kind of cross into, you know, kind of founding that when we had, you know, first got underway with Seven Star Press. And so it was, you know, obviously there was, you know, a little bit of a learning curve after that. But it was something that, you know, it wasn't like going in just cold. There's definitely things that I was already kind of grounded in, with distribution, creative product and things like that. So it's,
how did that prepare you to be crazy enough to start Imaginarium?
Well, because Imaginarium, I used to do a conference in Lexington called the Midwest Entertainment Industry Conference, which was basically a kind of like a fusion of kind of a South by Southwest kind of thing and a few other things. And we had panels and we had like showcases of bands and clubs and we had screenings of films at film venues. And it was a great, great event in Lexington. We never could grow to the point where it really, you know, was strong enough that it made sense to continue because it was, you know, and you don't want to beat yourself up doing something that's kind of, you know, just kind of struggling to, you know, I guess hit the break even point. And so, you know, unfortunately we weren't able to continue that. But it did give me a load of experience on running a multifaceted event. And so as I got into, you know, something that related to my passion, which is writing, it was an easy segue to want to do something that, like Imaginarium. And so, and Imaginarium is the more pure fit for me. It was because it kind of hit right at the core of what I was all about. And, you know, so that's why I always say it's a passion project for me. And, you know, all I wanted to do is make sure that it covers itself. And, you know, I wasn't looking at it to be like a big, you know, moneymaker or whatever, but just long as it can sustain itself and take care of its end of things and grow sensibly and not get so big that it would lose the personal touch. And those are kind of, as long as it sticks within those parameters, I mean, I definitely want to see it keep chugging. And so I think we're, you know, kind of at that point right now. I would like to see it maybe get a little bit bigger, but not lose the kind of atmosphere it has right now. So that's the fine line we got to walk. But yeah, but Imaginarium was not a big crazy thing for me to take on because I'd already had several years of experience actually running a very multifaceted conference. And actually, to be honest, the Midwest Entertainment Industry Conference is much harder to run because we got to the point where we had 14 clubs simultaneously were showcasing bands. We had at least 2 to 3 film screening venues, and then we had a full day of panels at the host hotel. So we were using, like, venues all across the city. And let me tell you, that is something else to coordinate the logistics on. And so Imaginarium being in one place, fantastic. It's great. Makes life a whole lot better. But, I did have experience going in Imaginarium.
And the people that, right, you know, don't know anything about Imaginarium that are on here listening, they're like, what is the cost this year for getting into Imaginarium?
This year?
Yes.
Okay, well, if you're an exhibitor, our cost is $110 for a table for all 3 days, and that comes with a badge. The cost for being a registered attendee is we had to take it for just up $5 from last year to $70, but that's 3 days. Or you can get day passes, and day passes are like $35, I believe. And I think we got a similar price in all 3 days. But so if you only want to come for like one full day, that includes everything, all entertainment events and everything, it's like $30-$35 bucks. So we're trying to keep the cost.
Yeah, $35 on Friday and Sunday, and then Saturday it's $45 because of this program. The programming is larger.
So that's it. Yeah, it's not one of those crazy events. It's like $299 to register for. We've tried to keep the costs in check as much as possible while giving an overwhelming amount of programming that should satisfy even the most veteran writing conference attendee.
Yeah, if you can't find something at Imaginarium that you're interested in, then you're just not trying hard enough.
Right. I've only been coming for a few years now, and Imaginarium, you know, is one of the least expensive conferences that I go to. I've actually looked at prices on some of them that were over $1,000 for a 3-day weekend.
Woo!
And
see,
you know,
Stephen Clay, thing is, he wants it accessible to everyone. People that are, you know, just starting or thinking about starting up into the professionals.
Right. And mm-hmm. The thing that I also like about it is when you have the table room or the show, whatever
Expo
you call
hall.
It. Expo hall.
Mm-hmm.
That's free for the public to come into, right?
Right.
Yes, that is free. Yeah, the Expo hall is free
mm-hmm.
for the public.
Mm-hmm. The vending room and Expo Hall is
come,
free.
Come in off the street and buy and
mm-hmm.
do all that stuff too. So,
Right. Right.
That's great.
That's so the people that just want to actually, you know, buy books or meet authors and get, you know, autographs or, you know, whatever, get their book signed, right? They can come in and don't have, you know, have to pay a registration fee. You only have to pay a registration fee if you're going to go to the panels, to the gaming hall, to the film festival, you know, and participate in any of the programming.
Right, right. That's one mm-hmm. of the things that I loved about the fact that, you know, when I came to Imaginarium the first time was, you know, that was free. You know, anybody could come in there off the street and go to that. And the cost
right.
of it was so economical compared to a mm-hmm. lot of the shows that I've gone to where you're basically letting people keep their money so that they can spend money on other things there. If you
right.
see a book that well, you've got money to buy it because you didn't spend it all trying to get to the place.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And
exactly.
That is just a great benefit that y'all are giving to the people out there. And
well, thank you.
The reason
I'm
bringing all this up and everything
extensively.
The reason I brought all this up is because a lot of people, they, you know, when they try to get started, they're like, where can I go and get started at? Imaginarium
mm-hmm.
is one of those places you can go and get started at. I would suggest you start before October, but if you don't, you can learn a lot at Imaginarium from different authors, different movie makers, different, you know, screenplay people, you know, all those different artists and stuff
even
that they're going to have there.
Mm-hmm.
That,
right.
You know, will have a genre that you can listen to and learn more information about. But, you know, if you get started, you also can go there and say, this is what I'm working on. You know, do you have any suggestions for me? And
right.
being creatives, we are always, you know, looking for other people's approval.
Right.
Right.
And,
right.
And you know, that is just part of us. You know,
and one thing,
you know,
that we try to watch is the state of where the industry is at right now. If you look at Imaginarium's programming, we always have programming that is cutting edge. It pertains to the topics that are going on right then and looking into the future. And the reason I say that is because it's one good reason to move forward and not be afraid to get on your path, even if you're just starting out, is because it will change. And even for somebody like us at Seven Star, you know, this is our 10th year, but let me tell you, we've seen seismic changes in the industry where we've had to totally, you know, adapt to some big shifts in the way things are done, the way the industry works. I know Michael can vouch for me on that. I mean, watching the transition from, you know, a print book world to an ebook world alone was massive. But beyond that, I mean, all the changes that take place that we've been talking about in the show with the way, you know, all these online platforms work and how they're always making policy. I mean, there's changes going on all the time. And so it's never going to be a case where you're going to master everything and then get into it, because it's going to keep changing. And so that's one thing to kind of say to encourage people, that you don't have to be a veteran to know it all. Because it is going to shift and change, and we're all going to have to adapt, veteran or beginner alike. And so,
mm-hmm.
yeah, you got to get into it.
Well, it's just, I wish I knew what Michael's forgotten about writing. So, you know.
So Michael remembers those days when Borders was still around and the print book world was lovely.
Oh, yeah.
He remembers those days. Like
But one of the new things that I'm hearing more and more about is the audiobooks where they're
yeah.
coming online big now. And, you know, people are going back to paperback from ebooks a lot of times, you know, the younger ones are, but, you know, there's still a lot of people that like to have an ebook in their hand. So, you know, and, you know, I don't know how to do any of that stuff really. That's one of the reasons
we're
I'm doing,
learn.
You know, doing podcasts.
Yeah, well,
and stuff,
the cool thing is print is recovering. I mean, we heard it, you know, like I said, we mentioned it a couple shows ago. We were at our high school event, and the librarian told us, high school event, that they have plenty of students that actually will wait and not check out the ebook version, but they will actually wait for a print version to become available before they actually read something.
Yep.
And we're talking high school students. So these are kids that have not grown up in the print dominant kind of climate that Michael and I knew when we started. These are, you know, when we started and not that long ago. And, but these are kids that have grown up in an ebook dominant world.
Well, I mean, I think all you have to do is look to the music world and look to vinyl and how, you know, vinyl was, was so, you know, passe for a long time. And now vinyl, within the last couple of years has been outselling, CDs and digital medium, just because there's that you know, people love the sound of vinyl, love the range of it.
Well, it's retro.
And you know, mm-hmm. turntable sales. You know, you go you go to any.
Sound, too.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you
everything
you see,
cycles.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, when people were saying that print was dead, I was like going, no.
It'll come back. It'll come back.
Yeah.
The only thing I don't expect to ever see again is 8-track tapes. You know?
Yeah, I don't think we'll see those again.
Oddly enough, cassettes, the company that makes cassettes today has had to scramble to get material to make cassettes because they have boomed back enough.
Yeah, why?
Well,
I don't know.
Keep up with the demand. It's
because
weird,
these kids
but
don't
true.
Realize what a pain in the arse that the cassettes are. That's why they think it's retro, but wait till they have to, you know, take a pencil to rewind them or the tape breaks, you know. Yeah, or it gets caught up in your recorder. You have to sit there, dig it out, and then it rips, you know. Yeah, the struggle's real.
Oh,
waiting for Tommy B. Smith to put something out in vinyl because he's got a good music background, and I'm waiting for some Tommy B. Smith on vinyl. So you better be listening to the chat room, Tommy. I want it now.
Well, I remember in college physically editing and mixing and whatnot with reel-to-reel tape.
right.
And that was fun.
Well, when you were in college, wasn't that, you know, high tech technology at that time?
Well, I was in college like in the late 80s, early 90s, and it was interesting in that I was kind of pushing the technology at the time. You know, I was still, you know, when I was doing my film work, still working with miniatures and whatnot, but I was augmenting things with the computer. And, you know, now you see the advent of the digital effects and whatnot, and you know, that didn't exist back then. And when I was doing the visuals I was doing for my student films, you know, I was trying to push the technology to do things that it wasn't, you know, find new uses for it that it wasn't really intended for, but that fit my needs. And, you know, of course, now you can go and do so many more things that I couldn't do back then. But, you know, there's something to be said, though, for, you know, creating a character through, you know, physical effects, through makeup, through model building. And, you know, it's like for a while there we got away from that, went solely to computer-generated medium. But if you look at the new Star Wars films, for instance, you know, they're going back to building physical sets and building models, you know, physical models and physical creatures and physical makeups. And there's a big push to recapture that feel of having things that, you know, are physically on the set. And of course, they're augmenting it with digital effects. But that's really the key, and for me, that's always been the key, is to try to find a way to marry the two, the new and the old, and make it work better. Because if you know, some movies that you know, embrace the pure digital effects, you end up with things that look not even as good as a video game. It just goes to show the directors who number one know their audience, and then also, you know, grew up with loving the things that we grew up with, and you know, embrace that and try to bring that feel to it. And it's the same thing with my writing. It's you know, I get it compared to a lot of different authors, you know, that's very humbling to me. But you know, growing up, I mean, I grew up with Stephen King and Ray Bradbury and Clive Barker and all those you know, 80s authors, you know, 70, well, King's been around since the 70s, but you know, I mean, that it's they all have been publishing in my lifetime, and I grew up with them, and so I love that style, that early, you know, late 70s, early 80s style where the, you know, the creepy was in, and you get to a lot of, you know, extreme horror and whatnot, and I don't do a lot of that. I mean, I'm not afraid to shed some blood when I need to, but for me, it's more, I'm much more into the atmospheric and the creepy, trying to make you not feel safe in the room.
Right.
And you know, that all harkens back to, you know, being a kid and staying up all night reading Stephen King's Night Shift and the stories in there and just and you know, watching Twilight Zone episodes and whatnot, so that, you know, that the twists here and there and the creepiness and the atmosphere, you know, it's that's what I try to capture when I do my stuff. And it's just, you know, everything old is new again, or you know, if you do it right and it's something that not everybody's out there doing, even though what you're doing may be quote unquote retro, you know, if you do it well, and you'll find the audience. So,
or you can be like Michael West and be way ahead of the curve, as the astute R.J. Sullivan, who himself is a very talented author, pointed out today, and I will quote R.J. right now. Here you go, folks. Michael West wrote Poseidon's Children. 6 years later, a film about having sex with a sea monster receives the most Oscar nominations ever. Coincidence? I think not. Read Michael West. He did it first. There you go,
yes,
folks.
Yes.
That's right.
Booyah!
Yeah. I've had a lot of people, like, you know, put side by sides up of the Shape of Water poster and the artwork from Poseidon's Children and whatnot.
Poseidon's Children,
yeah.
sir.
When you know, I love Del Toro for one thing, but you know, he, when I heard about this film, I said, oh, you're speaking to me, you know. But
I want to see that movie.
Well, maybe
so bad.
No,
well,
so
I guess
good.
They've been
it's
reading
so
Michael
good.
West books. That's what's really happening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
some
sure.
of your buyers have been some big people, evidently. So.
Yeah.
Dave
but,
Mattingly
yeah.
said he'll never touch Michael's tentacle again.
Oh, Lord. I have no response to that either. Oh, God.
What's the again?
Again. That's what I said, again.
Oh, Lord.
Means he's already touched it
tip
once.
Your
bar- okay.
Tip
that's
your
right,
bartender.
Right.
Dave Mattingly will be here all
my
week.
God.
Folks. Tip your bartender.
Dave put The Shape of West.
Oh, God.
Oh,
oh
no,
that's
one
fantastic.
Oh, God.
No one wants that.
Oh, they're wound up there in the chat room.
The chat room is on fire tonight. Let me tell you, Dave and David Sheridan and Kenzie and Tommy and Will, they are kicking some butt in the chat room tonight. This is what we love. This we love it. It inspires us. It really does. It helps us chug on the show. It's great when you guys get into it.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. And it goes back to, we talk about how things cycle, and that brings Daniel back to his topic, is you got to start somewhere. Yeah, don't be afraid if you think it's too retro or you have, you know, older ideas or you're drawing from, you know, older inspirations. Stephen actually drawn his information from Lord of the Rings and, you know, Narnia and things like that. So, you know, you can go back to the retro
sure.
days and draw, you know.
For inspiration,
you can go back
absolutely.
To Poe. Well, Daniel's Jack the Ripper. I mean, he goes way back. So, yeah, don't be afraid to explore that.
And,
well,
you know,
Greta Van Fleet. Greta Van Fleet, the new rock band that's absolutely awesome. I mean, they have a very Led Zeppelin-esque kind of sound. I mean, it's things go in cycles and influences come around, and there's no harm in that. I mean, it's you put your own voice to it, but I mean, nothing is new under the sun, as they say. And you know, every idea is out there somewhere. I mean, in today's volume-driven kind of creative world, it's just a matter of getting out there and putting your own stamp on it.
Mm-hmm. What was you saying, Daniel?
Well, like, you know, the cookbooks that I write, they're all, you know, Victorian cookbooks,
mm-hmm.
you know, that
right.
are recipes from that time period that I use.
Right.
So, and, you know, there's a lot of people that are interested in different things that, you know, it may not be everybody's thing, but all that you got to do is find your audience of who's interested in what you're doing. And,
right.
you know, don't be afraid to start doing it because, you know, then nobody will get a chance to share it with you if you never do it.
Right. Nobody will be able to enjoy it.
You know,
well, it's
and,
why Michael
you know,
can
like,
do
you know,
it's like where Michael can do a tale like The City Will Eat You Alive. It's why I can do a series like the Fires in Eden series. It's why you can do something with a new take on Jack the Ripper. I mean, you take and make it your own. You take things that, you know, may in some form kind of be out there, but you make it your own.
Right.
Well, just
and
like
I, you know, if the thing is that if you're passionate about that, if you love that, there's going to be other people out there that love it too. And so it's just, you know, it's what
exactly.
you know, we've talked in the past about, you know, finding your tribe. And
right.
it harkens back to that, where, you know, like-minded people will seek each other out, you know?
Right.
Well, taking that into consideration, you know, trying to find my tribe, they sort of found me and invited me to be on Rippercast, which will be out
yeah.
this next week, about Jack the Ripper fiction books. They, you know, found out about, you know, what I was doing, and they invited me to be on the podcast with them. And
all the way
that was
from London,
a podcast
England.
That I had been listening to for a long time that, you know, I was like, wonder if one day I'll be on this podcast. Well,
mm-hmm.
okay.
You had to start somewhere.
That,
yeah.
That bucket list, that one's off now.
And you know what? You'll probably be on there again. You know, and that's what I said. You had to start somewhere. You started, you know,
yep.
last year, getting stuff ready, get your book out, and look where you are. You know, and a year from now, it's going to, you know, a lot of things are going to be different. So, yeah, I mean, you know, people just, if you want to take that jump, because don't be afraid to put your stuff out there. Because somebody, like Michael was saying, if you like it, somebody else will too. And they'll
yep.
appreciate it.
Well, okay then. Then Michael and I are going to collaborate. And like Daniel said, audiobooks are getting crazy now. So we should put, Michael, me and you, collaborate. Wes Zimmer, The Release. Side A, a Michael West story. Side B, a Steven Zimmer story on vinyl. A vinyl.
Oh, there we go. There we go.
That's
nice.
What I'm talking about.
And if you really want to be challenging, I'll do the voiceover for it.
There you go.
Oh!
Well, you remember.
Beautiful. 100th
remember,
episode. The greatest idea ever has come to fruition.
I might be dating myself here. But
with liner notes by Tommy B. Smith.
Does anybody remember going and buying the comic books that came with the record at the back of the comic book that actually was you know a basically you know it was basically an audio book but it was the comic acted out on the vinyl?
Absolutely, yes, I do. Absolutely.
Now, I remember a vinyl disc that you put in. A video disc that you put in your computer and stuff. Is that what you're talking about, or
no? This was back in the 70s and 80s. There you could go.
Yes.
And there were special comic books that you could go and you could buy a Spider-Man comic, you could buy a Batman comic,
mm-hmm.
and they had like a 45 size record. That was at the back of the comic, and it was in the sleeve at the back of the comic. And you would take that out, you put that on your record player, and it was basically the issue that you had that was acted out by. It was like a radio play that was there on the vinyl.
Oh, cool.
That is true.
Huh.
Yeah, I remember those. Yeah. Dave Mattingly remembers the comic records. He's chiming in for the chat room. And he tells us we should make it a three-sided vinyl album. Okay, that scrambled my brain.
is he going to make the...
Oh, man.
Do one of those fancy vinyls that's like full of blood or something.
Oh, those are cool. Those are neat.
Yeah,
I had the little vinyl that read along with my books. You know, you'd get the little storybooks, and then you have these little, what, 45s? Yeah, it read along with your books.
I still got them somewhere. I still have them somewhere.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was after my time.
The ones that would beep when it was trying to turn the page?
Yes. It would go beep, and you'd notice on it.
I remember having
Are you game
my
West?
Daughter.
Are you game? You want to do this? You want to do a vinyl release? Me and you. Right now, I'm asking you.
I'm up for it, sure.
That would be
awesome.
All right. We'll have to look into this.
Yes. That'll give me some research to do. And Daniel's got his equipment now, so he can record this. We'll figure this out. We will figure this out.
Well, I know a group
yep.
that presses vinyl, so that's all I'm saying right now.
Uh-huh. There we go.
They can press it for the press.
Oh, well, let's see what you did there. That's awesome. We could literally be 7-star press. Oh, man, that'd be awesome.
Oh, dear.
The LP for the LLC.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
Oh, man. David Mattingly is thinking of Barber. He wants a shaped picture disc. Oh, my God. If you had my face on one side and West on another, oh, God. That would be.
You know what? That would be awesome if you took like the author photo I did for the like Spook House where I'm holding the door back.
Yeah.
And you press that on one side and then like you know Raiden Valkyrie or something on the other side.
We would have to totally get the pressing good, because I'm a purist, and so I always say that black vinyl is always the best, hands down.
Oh, yeah.
So to get a picture disc that sounds right, all right, challenge is on. Yeah, because I want
to
make sure we
sound
good,
too. What you need to do is you need to do y'all's pictures in blood.
Ooh.
Black vinyl with blood pictures. Yeah, go the Kiss and Saw route with that.
Oh, God, we just got the blessing from Tommy B. Smith in the chat room. He says, this sounds like it will be one interesting vinyl album. We just got Tommy's blessing, so it's going to be a hit.
And he's like, when's it coming out?
He says,
it's happening
for sure now.
And Will says something about, could this be the Hawkus of Chaos? Did I read that right?
The Haikus of Chaos.
That would definitely tie in with
Mr. Smith. Since he is the pen of chaos, and his book is Pieces of Chaos, Haikus of Chaos. Oh, my God.
Fantastic.
Who knows? Tommy might already have that in works, though. I don't know.
Also, you got to remember how long I get to read on that vinyl.
Yeah, we get about 30 minutes a side if you press it right. We could do this right.
Well, you can get about an hour per side if you press it right, depending on what size vinyl.
Well, yeah. I
full
make sure
LP,
we,
you
we,
can get
yeah,
about
a good quality pressing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't want
a crappy sounding vinyl release. Michael and I want to sound pristine coming off a real good turntable. So.
Tommy said he's
going
to write a haiku for the liner notes or something.
What would be?
You're
going
to have to give me new stories then.
Well, what would be a cool story? I was just thinking that it would be cool to have my Ave Santani, the one about the listening to the forgotten score.
Oh yeah.
That would be a cool one to be listening to on vinyl.
Oh, God, Mattingly's writing haikus as we speak in the chat room. First
yes,
time
is.
We've had a haiku written. 100 episodes in, we've had our first haiku written in the chat room by Dave Mattingly. Just want to commemorate that. Oh, my God. Well, we already sold a copy. David Sheridan wants to pre-order this.
Yeah.
There you go, Michael. It's a commercial hit already.
Tommy
by any
pre-order.
Standard, it's a commercial hit already.
Yeah, there's two people wanting it.
Two.
So hell, it's our bestseller.
Michael, we got to get started tomorrow. That's a bestseller in the indie world. Two units pre-ordered.
Two units pre-ordered. That beats my last couple of novels.
Yeah, finally we can be rewarded for all the hard work we put in. We sold 2 units. This is good. Oh my God!
If we one more, we got a crowd.
Yeah. Anybody in the chat room? We gotta get a third commitment. Come on, folks. Let's get another pre-order.
We need a third pre-order. Throw
like
a third
Tommy
pre-order.
Tommy said the fans are screaming for this one already. Oh my God! Come on, we got 2. Come on, one more person chime in. Make our night. Do we have a third pre-order?
I'm on.
Oh, we're hard selling now. Oh, Kenzie!
There you go, Kenzie! Yay!
Yeah, my Dave's getting technical here. When you play the record backward, you can hear Weird Al. Oh man. He's a hard sell. Oh man. Nope. 3 units, Michael. 3 units pre-ordered already, man.
Daniel, you got at least 3 people that's going to hear your recording.
3 people, okay.
Dave is going to pre-order one side of the album, so we have 3.5 pre-orders.
David said it's worth the $59.99 plus shipping.
So we have 3.5 pre-orders. We can keep it under $40, I'm sure.
Well, the thing about it is we can send them half an album.
Yeah. Here's these checks in the mail, so he's on it.
I might have to. Does this mean I might have a gold record that I could hang in my office?
There you go.
Well, of course,
that's an aluminum one, Michael.
A gold record, platinum. Liechtenstein. I don't know. Liechtenstein, 3 units sold, might be a gold record. You never know. It's a small country.
It'd be aluminum.
Yeah, you can get a gold record. Gold
aluminum.
Record depends on the country.
Recycled. We can make it out of recycled aluminum.
Yeah, to be almost Final Tap-ish. Yeah, we've gone aluminum. We've gone copper.
Dave says our 3.5 pre-orders account for 50% of the chat audience.
That's true. But hey, I will say all the chat
audience
has stood up and been counted. Declared their names.
If you can get it to 50% of an audience, that's a good starting point.
That's right.
True. That is true.
Good marketing line. 50% of our listening audience pre-ordered the new vinyl release from Wes Zimmer. Fantastic.
And Will says, could we assemble a dirty bomb out of these albums? And Dave Medley's like, now that's metal. That's aluminum, too. Metal. Tin and aluminum metal.
Well, Michael's already been kind of like blessed on high because he's already had the encounter with Lita Ford holding his book,
yeah,
and everything. So it's So he's consider myself metal, but that's metal when you're in a picture of Lita Ford in your book.
Still one of my greatest memories ever is Lita Ford calling me a badass. So.
Nice.
That is metal.
Nice.
That's metal.
That is metal. Yeah. Because not everybody could say that.
Yeah. And,
no.
And
well,
lately
I haven't decided to make it out of lead yet, so.
Throwing up devil horns.
Oh, my God.
Fire, you know.
They've lost their minds. Radically says the first vinyl audiobook to get an Oscar nomination, despite not being a movie. There you go, Michael. We've got it cut out for us.
See, people, you got to start somewhere. And the ideas stem from the oddest of places. And if you find that tribe, see what can happen.
You could be on the 100th episode of your podcast and get an all-new, out-of-the-box idea that germinates into one of the most tremendous releases of 2018. There you go.
From a bunch of wackos.
That's right.
And we'll have to have the release party at the brewery that Michael's featured at.
We need to find one of the few remaining Tower Records and have a signing there.
That would be epic.
Oh,
epic.
No, I don't think so. I think we ought to go to Scarlet Lane Brewery. I think that's where we need
there
to go.
There we go. Works for me.
Yeah, that's
I'm
awesome.
Sure it's several months away still, but there is going to be I will be doing a signing there as part of a Halloween festival. So
very cool. See, we could have the album done by then. There you go.
God, that'd be a dream come true. A vinyl release, and with Michael West, I would feel so warm and fuzzy that night. You guys would have to like, kind of carry me out of there or something.
Well, that's just another Saturday night.
Yeah, just another thing. Yeah. Oh, man.
Books and bourbon. Right.
books of bourbon.
Yeah, don't you think we've forgotten the liner notes by you, Tommy B. Smith? We're not letting you off the hook on this one. I saw your comment.
And Will, like Will Hutcherson said, he said, this is, you know, it's where our crimes against humanity are born. It's incredible. And he's like, somebody should be recording this chat room.
That's true. It's only Wednesday, he said. Oh, God.
And Dave Mattingly says, straight out of seventh.
Oh, my God. Hey, one of my dreams would come true, though. I've always wished I could be on vinyl, and this is possible. It can be done. It can be done.
There you go. Yes.
So there you go, Daniel. You
wait, when do I get
getting
the story
started,
to start working with?
You had a whole idea germinate on the show topic you came up with here.
Yep. Now when do I get the stories to start working with on that?
Yes.
Well, we'll get to work in the morning on it. Michael and I are going to celebrate tonight. We both come from the vinyl world.
If both of y'all celebrate with bourbon and everything, there will be no story written in the morning. It'll be in the afternoon that the story starts getting written.
Yeah, I feel bad because Michael will be calling into work and all. Hey, but 100 episodes is not bad. That's a lot of radio, so that's not too bad. It's worth celebrating.
That's true.
My God.
Very cool.
We've had a lot of good folks. Alexander S. Brown, Sayla Janelle, who were co-hosts with Michael and I for a lot of the early episodes, and we've had guest hosts like Tommy B. Smith, Eric Jude, Tony Acri. We've had a lot of good folks along the way, and guests galore. We've had some amazing guests, and it's been a cool ride up to 100. So here's to the next 100, being better than ever.
Indeed.
We can finally be syndicated now that we've reached 100 episodes.
I hope so. That'd be fantastic. We might get 5.5 pre-orders then.
Hey, Michael, is that S-I-N?
if we do it, it is.
Apparently, Dave Mattingly used to co-own a radio station. So we need to chat with
Dave Mattingly.
Dave
has done like
this.
Everything in the universe.
I'm telling you, is there anything Dave Mattingly hasn't done?
That's incredible! Incredible. Just don't play Words with Friends with him. No, unless you want
to step up
the game, then yeah.
Yeah.
You gotta be serious.
Mm-hmm. He's fierce.
And Dave says, well, Will, oh, he's talking about Will, now you know a small slice of the pain of being Steven Zimmer.
Oh, they finally get it. It took 100 shows, but they finally get it.
He says it took 7 years. Will says it took 7 years.
Seven. What a number. Such irony. Oh,
seven
man.
Years.
What a party.
What type
irony
of radio
can be
station?
Pretty ironic sometimes.
Do what, Daniel?
Ask Will what type of radio station he owned.
Okay.
Or Dave.
Dave. Yeah, it's Dave. What type? Well, you probably heard. You ain't asking here.
Dave says I don't dance, so I'll be like
Phil
Collins.
Oh, he
Collins.
Said,
I'll say,
Septimus?
Phil Collins, I can't dance.
Yeah, he said Septimus. S-E-P-T-I-M-U-S.
If you all want to see me dance, come to Imaginarium, because last 2 years they've got me on the dance floor. There
I
you
did.
Go.
I had to drag him kicking and screaming, but I did. Oh, it was a Christian station.
Did the white man shuffle?
He did. He knows how to do, like, the lawnmower, and I taught him how to do, we call it Costco. It's actually the shopping cart, but, you know, he decided, well, if you act like you're loading bigger boxes into the cart, we call it Costco. Yeah.
Yeah, I've learned some cool moves. I don't think Michael's witnessed me do those fancy moves yet.
Oh, I have.
I'm not sure if you've seen me.
Oh, you have? Have you? Have you seen that? It's good stuff.
Not this last year, but the year before, yeah. I was talking to a couple of gentlemen when you were doing those last year, so I didn't see it.
Well, last year it got a little crazy in there, I ain't gonna lie. But it was fun.
Yeah, by the time he was out there on the dance floor, I was talking to Gentleman Jack and, you know, Mr. Punch.
Well, like Dave
said, we were all hitting the sauce too, but
after seeing Steven dance at Imaginarium, I'll bless the memory clean on Sunday morning. Dave hosts a non-denominational service on Sundays at Imaginarium, just so that makes sense. So, but he will bless the memory clean on Sunday morning at Imaginarium 2018 after you all
you
see
need
me dance.
You can go to
Lacey Marie for therapy.
Yes, yeah. Lacey Marie is she is the 7-star press therapist. Yes.
But she's already given
up.
We're
taking her in. She really worries about Michael and Daniel.
and well, she should.
With good reason.
Yes.
She wants to come to my office and bless it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't want to come to your office, actually, but she...
Yes, she wants to bless it. Yes, and then we're all good to watch Hallmark movies.
Yes.
That's fantastic.
For those of you that don't know, people, Michael and Steven and Daniel actually enjoy Hallmark movies.
They do.
No.
I love it. Hold it here.
Enjoy is not exactly the word. That's a Hallmark movie. I enjoy a good Ripper Hallmark movie as well as the next person, yo. What was funny? The Hills Have Eyes was a great Hallmark movie. I mean, what was funny is that Robin Blankenship was helping me out at a Horror Hound here last November, and we had the Hallmark Channel on in the room, and I was kind of half in and out of sleep, and something happened on this Hallmark movie, and I'm like, what? What? That doesn't make any sense. What happened? So I called my wife up. And I said, so what just happened? And she was cracking up because she knew she was watching the same movie. Back at our house.
Oh,
I could fill in the blanks.
That's awesome.
But see, this is how you know that you found the right person who appreciates you and whatnot, because she's in the bedroom watching Hallmark channels with our dog King Caesar. I'm in my office in the darkness with MTV on or whatever, and we coexist just fine.
Oh, Lord. That is awesome.
Well, that's Steven. He loves these Hallmark movies. And then he'll go to Shogun, you know, these Japanese warrior movies. And here's me watching my Victorian movies and all, you know, all the things I can find about Victoria, Queen Victoria, and he suffers through it all.
Well, it was funny because
I do.
Last Saturday night, I'm flipping channels and I turn on Svengoolie. They were showing Godzilla versus Mothra, of course I have to sing along with the song. And my wife is like going, "Oh my god!" Like there's no one else in America doing this right now. I said, "Oh honey, you would be surprised."
Does your wife give you the same look mine does? What the hell's wrong with you?
Yeah. Basically,
get that. I get that.
Oh man,
I've spent enough years here for everything to be able to be crazy now. So yeah, I consider myself eccentric because of my age now, not crazy.
Well, I think we've actually talked ourselves off the air.
We did.
No,
we did.
I think we have.
We're still talking, and it went off the air. Everybody's like, there's no sound. We lost you all.
Technically, it's still recording, I think, for the stream and the download. So we're okay on that. But, yes, on a Mothra and Godzilla note, we bring an end to the 100th episode.
Awesome. Hey,
I thought I heard something earlier,
you
know, but I was like,
blind air time.
No dead air. Thank God we learned how to fill it up after 100 episodes. Oh, man. We will see you all next week on Wednesday for the first of the next 100 episodes.
Will says this is the extended version. They record it first and it's the extended version.
Rock on, everybody.
Be the 101 for
that. That's a good 100 down, next 100 to go, and more after that.
Hell yeah.
Take care.
Next week will be the 101 proof edition.
Yeah, 101 proof next week, next Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern.
Hell yeah.
With Tommy B. Smith. Take care.
Y'all have a good night.
Bye.
Bye.